massive logistics, loads of detail and effort has got Steve Barnes, the Hong Kong visa geezer, back in the chair. Good to see you.
Thanks, Phil. You say such nice things
about me. We've been star-crossed lovers for a little while.
It's good to be back.
Good to see you. Nice one. A few things I want to get in with you for today. Steve Barnes, of course, visa expert. Any questions you may have, do drop us a line. morningbrew@rthk.hk. He pops by every month or two and just see where we go. Isn't it interesting? The same questions do tend to come up, and we always say, don't be scared to ask.
Yeah, that's right. And I think it's just reflective of the fact that, you know, people have similar experiences because they're having their immigration experience within the context of a particular
way. It's down to them. It's them, isn't it?
Which way the service is provided, and they've got a set of circumstances, and you realise after a while that whilst every single case is different, the circumstances that people find themselves in tend to sort of repeat themselves in themes.
I tell you what I want to talk about today. There's related stories in the press. The focus seems to be on domestic helpers again, various laws and bits and pieces.
Yeah.
Now, I know that's not specifically your thing, but it will take us into the area of overstayers. Now, I want to talk about overstayers in general, because really not everybody does it on purpose. Give me just a little bit of your thoughts on that area.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you've got a limited stay attached to your time in Hong Kong,
yeah,
and you inadvertently...
Which is easy to do, I'm sure.
Indeed, absolutely, and the Immigration Department are aware of this. But if you inadvertently overstay, then, you know, without any further ado, you report down to the Immigration Department, reveal what's gone on, make your explanations, and invite the Immigration Department to sort it out for you.
Which sounds lovely on paper. I'm assuming, you're probably going to shout me right down on this one, but I'm really hoping that they're not very dismissive of domestic helpers as opposed to a bloke like me.
No, I mean, in fairness to the department, they do have a customer service mandate and they treat everybody as the human beings that they are. The fact that each individual's got a different set of immigration circumstances surrounding their time in Hong Kong doesn't actually change the way that the Immigration Department deal with the individuals that present to them looking to use the service.
There's something that I've never really understood. There was talk quite a few years ago about a so-called super prison. And one of the sort of amusing things that came out of it was that the prisons are full of people who are so-called overstayers. Now tell me why can't we just chuck them out? Why do you have to teach them a lesson and use up all the resources?
I mean, that's a fair comment, but, you know, we have something called the rule of law.
Truly, yeah.
And so what ultimately defines whether you're an overstayer or not is, you know, rules that are based on laws.
Mm-hmm.
And if you breach them, and the immigration, or the prosecuting authorities in this respect, the Immigration Department, determine that a lesson should be taught for the breach of laws.
Yeah,
it's just the way the judicial process works, you know.
I'm totally with you. I understand what you're saying, but it just seems like an ultimate waste of time when you're going to chuck them out. They're never going to be allowed back in again, but we'll show you, you know.
It's the rule of law, and long may it continue,
yeah.
Phil.
Is that the same? Pretty much the same in other places.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look,
get on the first plane and get lost.
If you've broken the law, then, you know, the sanctions of law, once due process has been followed, if they're to apply to you, will apply to you. And if the determination is that imprisonment will follow, that's not a decision the Immigration Department makes, it's a decision which the judges make.
Yeah, I know. It just seems a bit nuts. However, what can we do about that? Absolutely nothing. So the overstayer thing, you reckon it's easy to handle. But there are limits, I'm sure.
Of course there are, yeah. I mean, if you're an inadvertent overstayer, the facts of your overstaying will be revealed when you present them to the Immigration Department. And they understand that we're all human beings, we've all got, you know, weaknesses in the way that we organise our lives, and it's quite possible that, you know, due to a set of unforeseen circumstances, you find yourself outside of the stay that you've been allowed by the department. But
do you see that?
Be okay.
I mean, it's like you or I saying, I want to go to America. Oh, damn, my passport's running out tomorrow, and you didn't realise. It's that sort of mentality,
yeah,
isn't
it? But you know, most people have a very strong indication about how long they're allowed to remain here. You know, if you come as a visitor and you get 14 days at the border, you know, you look at your passport and say, okay, I've got 14 days. If you then effectively turn and close your mind to those 14 days and stay for 3 months, without really speaking so much further, you've made a conscious decision there that you want to be an overstayer. So,
right.
You know, full force of law will come down upon you.
See, you paint these guys out as being very fair. Okay, I don't know anything different. I think they can be super fair sometimes, because I have known people who've had tourist visa, tourist visa, tourist visa, and it goes on and on and on and on, and nobody nicks them for it.
Well, because because they're able to persuade the officers at the border
is
trying to present themselves that they're bona fide visitors. Yes, that's how that works. But I think we've discussed this in the past, actually, Phil, where you have a situation, if you get more than 180 days as a visitor in any 1 year given period, then the officers at the border have been put on notice that... If you spend more than 180 days in Hong Kong over a 12-month period as a visitor, the officers at the border will look at your visitor profile and they can conclude for themselves that there may be something that is bringing you to Hong Kong, or rather keeping you to Hong Kong on an extended basis, that might be a breach of your conditions of stay.
Well, let's assume, these guys being human, that they don't notice. You, in theory, can keep doing it, can't you?
Absolutely. And of course, the officers at the border are so busy, and they've got performance targets that they need to meet for the purposes of, you know, of clearing passengers through the system. It is perfectly understandable how you can, how both you and I have talked about this in the past, you can find people in Hong Kong that have been here for several years, coming and going as a visitor.
And working, you know.
Well, I don't know about the work. I don't know about the work piece.
Oh, I do know.
Well, fine.
I don't mean me.
Yeah, but yeah, in terms of, you know, the protracted visitors, the visitors that never go home, as it were, there are lots of them. That's right. But the thing is, Phil, you never know when you present yourself at the border to re-enter whether the hammer's going to fall.
No, absolutely.
So it's the sword of Damocles hanging over you, and if you've got valid circumstances in your life that are keeping you here, then, you know, why fool around with the visitor visa?
Maybe you're a taxidermist and it's not needed in Hong Kong.
Whatever's keeping you here, you've obviously got the means to stay here,
yeah,
and therefore you've got probably circumstances in your life that would apply to some visa category that would afford you residence permissions.
I suppose so. Actually, it's interesting you mentioned the guys at the border, because they're not just sort of droogs who go stamp. These guys do have say on things. What other things do they have to say on?
Well, look, you know, they're part of a system. Remember that. It's a system that works incredibly well, where information is exchanged, where there are processes anticipated, where documents are produced, where documents are validated, decisions are made within the context of policy. It's a very finely tuned machine. So these guys at the border do, in fact, have, you know, well, they're playing a really important role in the entire process. They're not just rubber stampers, as it were.
Because you do think that you just get next, done.
Because that's all you see.
Truly.
Yeah. And you only ever really understand the significance of the decisions that these people are making, these immigration officers are making, when actually they've made a decision that's right for the circumstances, and it's now having a negative effect on the person involved. And that person involved has now got to start really dealing with the system to regularize things. So you understand at that point that any decision that's made at the border can actually have a negative effect on what you're trying to achieve from an overall immigration perspective subsequently when you're trying to sort things out. Now, an example of this, Phil, is if, for example, the hammer has fallen in the way that I've just suggested, and say typically you're a 90-day visitor visa, that's what you normally get when you present yourself at the border, 90 days, no questions asked. If the immigration department have now decided to start to ask questions and they have reservations or doubts about what it is that you're doing in Hong Kong as a visitor, then they will endorse your passport, SCL, which is a short conditional landing, and instead of giving you 90 days...
What do we look for on that?
SCL, short conditional landing.
And where would that be?
It's just the handwriting next to the stamp.
Ah.
And you've now been reduced from 90 days to 30 days. So you think to yourself, okay, well, it's 30 days, I'll leave and I'll come back again and I'll get another 90 days. But no, because you've got SCL endorsed in your passport, the next time you present yourself, you're only going to get 14 days.
If he sees it, although it'll be in the computer.
They will see it. Believe me, they'll see it.
Yeah.
Okay, and then the next time you present yourself, whether at the border or you go down to immigration department itself, they're going to give you 7 days.
And so on. And then no days.
And that's it.
Yeah.
And then you're not going to come back again for 12 months.
The so-called visa run still exists. I think it's a case of who dares wins on that, though, isn't it? Macau or whatever.
And the Immigration Department, actually, they don't discourage it, because it actually... The ability to quickly exit and quickly re-enter gives them a certain efficiency in the process, in the way that they're now able to grant entry visas to everybody, irrespective of where they're making the application from, whether they make it from inside Hong Kong or whether they make it from outside of Hong Kong. Mm. It used to be that you could, if you made an application for an entry visa, you needed to be physically outside of Hong Kong on the day that you submitted the application.
I remember that.
Yeah, but now you don't need to be physically outside of Hong Kong on the day of the application. They'll entertain it while you're in Hong Kong, on an entry visa basis, so that when they issue the visa, knowing full well that you're presently in Hong Kong as a visitor, they then say to you, now have to make an exit, so you typically go off to Macau.
Yep.
In the process, you relinquish your visitor visa status at the point of exiting. You then place your new residence visa, be whether a dependent visa or an employment visa, an investment visa, it doesn't matter what type. You place that visa on a new page in your passport, and you then re-enter Hong Kong effectively an hour or two after you've exited with your new visa in your passport, and the immigration officer will then authenticate it and will validate it, and your period of stay as a new resident will commence.
A few more minutes with Steve Barnes, the Hong Kong visa. We've been doing this for years. Actually, if you've shared an experience that Steve is talking about, do drop me a couple of lines, because honestly, I mean, I have known people that have gotten away with this for a long time. I, you know, no comment on what they're doing, but it's worked.
Well, as I say, it's because the facility is there within the system, but it isn't an advised way of maintaining a residence in Hong Kong, because you never know when the hammer's going to fall.
Yeah, are they likely to go, he looks okay? I mean, there is the human touch on this. It's got to come into it. That's profiling.
Look, you know, in all honesty, my experience of passing through the borders and boundaries is exactly the same as yours. You know, I don't have the ability to go sit on the immigration department's officer's shoulders for a complete day at Chetlock Cock and see the work that they do. So your guess is as good as mine. But you know, the reality is they do a job. They do an assessment based on a set of trained criteria.
Yeah.
They make the determination based on the best judgment that they can in light of the training they've received. And the system gets administered and people get in, and that's the way it works.
What do you know about stop lists? Lots of myths about that. Is that your bag at all?
I don't think there's a stop list per se. I mean, you have, you will have security advisories, which I'm sure the frontline officers are aware of. And if any individual presents himself that falls within, you know, the parameters of anything that's listed on what you would call a stop list, then I'm sure, you know, their motions would be set in play.
Goes the computer. I just wonder what you have to do to be on one. Obviously financial stuff, I guess. But I don't believe they can do that anymore. You know, the whole thing about if you're going to leave with a one-way ticket. In fact, coming into Hong Kong is very difficult with a one-way ticket.
If you're a visitor.
If you were going to leave with a one-way ticket, apparently they cannot stop you now. That used to be, you know, why are you going? What are you running away from? One-way ticket.
I'm not quite sure that I follow. Are we talking about...
Say somebody's got a huge $squillion tax bill, and then he said, right, I'm going to do a runner.
Yeah.
The statute of limitations would not allow them to put you on a stop list. As I believe.
I honestly don't know. I mean, in terms of the running away with a very, very large tax bill, I think the Inland Revenue Department have got a number of mechanisms in place.
Big dogs at the airport.
Which put on notice a number of different agencies, one of whom is immigration. But as to the extent that the immigration department stop people from leaving because there is an unpaid tax bill, I think that your guess is probably as good as mine.
I've got an email here from Steve, which is good because it takes us back to where we started. He says, believe me, guys, if you are a Filipino, you get 30 days, 14, then 7, without a doubt, even when visiting relatives here.
That's right. That's the way that the immigration department treat that particular nationality. But it's not bad, because actually you only get 14 days at the border as a visitor visa. So if you come in on an entry visa that you've acquired in advance, you get 30 days, and then effectively saying that you can then get extensions to the point where they're not going to let you stay.
Yeah,
in
but
longer.
You see what he's put. You know what his point is there.
But remember, the Filipinos get 14 days as visitors. There are some nationalities that also get 14 days. Some get 30. Some get 90. Some get 180. So in granting that period of stay with the visa upon arrival at the borders, the Immigration Department have made certain assessments as to, you know, the risk profiles of visitors from those countries. And therefore, you know, that's factored into the mix. So it's not, you know, no one's pointing the finger at Filipinos as a nation per se. It's just that, you know, certain countries have got visa arrangements in place that represent, you know, a certain risk profile. And it's not only Filipinos who get 14 days. Indians get 14 days, for example. There are some nationalities that used to get visa-free access that no longer get visa-free access, for example, like the Pakistanis. And one could argue, well, what's the difference between an Indian and a Pakistani for immigration purposes? Effectively, the same sort of dynamic must be in place from a risk profile perspective. But at the end of the day, a few years ago, the Immigration Department decided that Pakistanis had a higher security risk profile, and they're now subject all Pakistanis to visa before arrival. arrival. So, you know, it sort of swings and roundabouts, but there is a rational system in place to determine exactly who gets
it's
what.
It's not what you'd call
reason.
Perfect, though, if you want to go down that avenue. Let me go to another email here.
Yeah.
This guy says, as far as I understand, one of the requirements for applying for a work visa is a minimum salary of $15,000. How would this stand when one wants to employ, for example, a Spanish chef to work in an authentic Spanish restaurant on a salary of $10,000? Is it possible to apply for visas on the grounds that the person has a skill set not available in the local domestic market? If so, would this also be applicable to waiters, managers, to reflect a number of cuisines in a restaurant?
That's a great question. That's just full of you know, needs for different answers. But
let's go to his first one about the chef for 10 grand.
The first question about chefing for 10 grand. Look, the test for the approvability test for an employment visa is that, you know, you need to show that the applicant possesses special skills, knowledge, and experience of value to and not readily available in Hong Kong, and in all the circumstances of the case, the employer is justified in engaging the services of that expatriate personnel rather than the services of a local person. Right. Local being defined as anybody, as the Immigration Department doesn't need to take a ruling on as to whether or not it should be given permissions to do that work. Okay, so if you then make
30 seconds, by the way.
If you then make the suggestion that the fact that you only want to pay them $10,000 because that's what the market's worth, as determined by the availability of people who can cook Spanish food in Hong Kong, then, you know, that's an argument you're going to have with the Immigration Department, who will refer to the Vocational Training Council, and they'll refer to other agencies to see whether that's reasonable or not. The bottom line is, if you're going to pay $10,000 for a specialist chef,
and you shouldn't be running a business.
You can't be that specialist, and the Immigration Department know it, so pay them what they're worth.
Pay them what they're worth. And just a PS here from Jeff, he said, if you have an unpaid tax bill from the past, they will stop you leaving. It happened to my brother. Steve, pleasure to talk to you. Thanks so much for coming. We'll chat in a month or so.